Welcome to the Lost Dot Podcast and the fourth edition of the Trans-Pyrenees Race, supported by our race partners, Pedaled, Tailfin, Komoot, and Peak Design. I'm Ian Broom, and over the next 10 days, we'll be sharing all the stories from this year's Trans-Pyrenees Race, TPR number 4. At 7 a.m. on the 27th of September, around 100 riders will begin a journey of pure adventure as they attempt to twice traverse the majestic Pyrenees Mountains, climbing a total of around 40,000 meters in the process. And for the first time, this edition will see our riders start in the east and cycle west until they reach the Atlantic coast, before heading back along the famed Raid Parcours, which includes some of the Pyrenees' most iconic climbs. Hannah Lobelestier is the race director at TPR number 4.
Each year we design the route for TPR from the ground up, looking to create a different feel and character for each edition and to explore new areas. We get a lot of returning riders, so keeping the route fresh and giving them new roads and trails to explore is really high up on our priority list. Girona really made sense to us as a start and finish location because it's become this real mecca for cycling. It's surrounded by good road and off-road cycling, it enjoys a great Mediterranean climate, it's well connected, and it's also this beautiful medieval city, so it's no surprise that there's now this huge cycling community there, and we thought it would just make a great start and finish location for the Trans-Pyrenees. Thankfully, there's such a variety of landscapes and culture across the Pyrenees, and that's not only what makes it such a special race, but it's what enables us to be creative with the way that we plan our routes. As well as a whole host of new control points and parkour, the new start location in Girona will change up the vibe of the race, but importantly, it also means that the return parkour, the Raid Pyrenean, will be tackled in reverse this time round, which will give TPR veterans an entirely different experience of the climbs that they'll be tackling along the way and the views that they get.
TPR is an unsupported, primarily free route race. Riders are able to plan their own route through the mountains so long as they visit a series of control points and mandatory parkour, which are fixed sections of the course. That freedom to roam in some of the world's most stunning landscapes is one of the things that keeps riders coming back to get another taste of that Pyrenean magic. Race coordinator David Eyre describes the appeal of the race.
It's really exciting to have so many riders coming back year on year to the Trans-Pyrenees. For me, it's the most beautiful race on the calendar. I've said this before, and I'll never tire of saying it. And I think that's an opinion that's shared by a lot of the people who come and take part as well. So you've got something which feels so simple. It's like a single mountain range, but there is so much variety within that as well. So the fact that they're constantly crisscrossing borders between France, Spain, and Andorra, the fact that you're going from the Atlantic to the Mediterranean as well, getting a taste of both of the kind of climates and cultures of the different ends of the Pyrenees, the fact that there's a mixture of on and off road, some hike a bike as well, it's kind of like a choose your own adventure story. And I think that everyone who takes part really relishes that. We spend a lot of time out here like trying to make sense of the different routes that riders might take and think about like how we can take them somewhere that is challenging but exciting and still safe as well. To hear the feedback from the riders after TPR last year, we were kind of blown away by just how much people had enjoyed it. It was like, I think, testament to the hard work of the team over a number of months, but like exactly the kind of reward that we hoped for personally, to see that. And then that has thankfully translated into a lot of them coming back for another go. Obviously, the route is a reverse this year, so it's like a slightly different look at the race overall. But despite that, like that seems to have been like another thing which entices people back, because it's like a taste of something familiar and that they know that they already love, but then with like a dabble of something new and different as well. So it's not a surprise, but it's just really heartwarming, I think, to have so many people like so passionate about a simple race.
The first three editions of the Trans-Pyrenees race saw some fantastic performances from some impressive riders. And we expect more of the same at TPR number 4. with a superb field that includes Robin Gimperla, who just this summer rode to victory at the Transcontinental Race. Race reporter at TPR No. 4, Stuart Downey, caught up with Robin to see how he's feeling before he heads to the Pyrenees.
Yeah, I mean, my shape won't be like it was at TCR, but it will be fine. I continued training. I had a bit of a break and then I continued training just normally. So it won't be as, like at TCR this year, it was really, I was super sharp. Like, just how sports people prepare for their highlight of the season. Mm-hmm. And now Trans-Pyrenees is like sports people prepare for their normal races of the season.
Sure.
So it's like a lot of serious work has gotten into it, but it's not 100%.
How are you feeling about it? I mean, I presume you've ridden in the Pyrenees before?
No, I haven't.
Not really, first time?
Never, ever. I just walked through the Pyrenees once on a study trip, but it's some time ago. Mm-hmm. So that's my only experience with the Pyrenees. No, I think I have never ridden through the Pyrenees. Mm-hmm. So I'm excited for that as well. People say it's way more rough than the Alps. Mm.
Do you have any expectation for yourself going into it? Or is it kind of first time in the Pyrenees, I'm going to enjoy it, see how it goes?
No, I do have expectations. It's a bit, maybe like the pressure is a bit too low in order to like be really sharp for the race. Because I tell myself, if you win, it's super cool because you can say you won the most important one, and then you doubled up mm-hmm. and showed everybody like that's the guy to beat basically anywhere. So that would be cool. Yeah. But then again, if I don't win, it's very simple to say, yeah, but still, you won the important one. No one cares. But I, of course, this is somehow how I find out I'm thinking, yeah. Even though I don't want to. Uh-huh. So I try to tell myself, hey, this is a separate race. We don't line up for coming in second.
Sure.
We line up to win. That's clearly what my racing spirit is about.
While the Pyrenees provide an unchanging backdrop, each edition of the race comes with new places to explore and fresh challenges. Here's Hannah to take you through the route for TPR No. 4.
From Girona, the start parkour heads a short way out of the city to drop riders at the base of Rocca Corba, at which point riders will then free route their way towards Parkour 1, which sits just south of Soy d'Urgell in Spain. The parkour here winds its way up a quiet valley road, starting at Novas de Segre, passing red rocky outcrops before it starts to climb more severely with hairpins heading up out of the valley towards Taos, a remote mountaintop village. From here, they'll free route to the first control point of the race, a passive control in Espui, which is a tiny village surrounded by 3,000 meter peaks. After Espui, riders will cross the border into France, heading to the passive control point 2, the Col d'Aspin, which has become a favourite climb for TPR riders, featuring on the raid parkour of the race every year. The next control point, in Tola Odessa in Spain, will be the first staffed CP of the race, control point 3, and it's en route here that we expect to see some of the first major splits in the field, as riders choose very different routes to cross the border in this area of the High Pyrenees. After this comes parkour 3, just north of Hatha, where the route guides them in and out of several valleys, including the Heco Valley and Anso Valley. After this, they'll ride through or potentially around the Basque Country to reach the turnaround point on the race, Parkour 4, which goes up Jezkabel, a ridgeline road that climbs up to almost 500 metres above sea level and looks out over the Atlantic coastline. Control point 4 is next, which is a staffed control in Zugarramurdi, a typical Basque village, which served as the setting of the Zugarramurdi witch trials, where local caves supposedly served as a gathering place for witches. After this, riders will head towards the start of the Raid Pyrenean Parkour, just north of the Spanish border in Irati. This 724-kilometre parkour tackles most of the most famous, or infamous, climbs in the French Pyrenees, one after the other, including the highest point at the summit of the Tourmalet. Over this parkour, riders will gain over 18,000 metres of elevation, and this will guide them towards the Mediterranean coastline and the turnaround point there. Finally, the split finish parkour takes riders to the coast on the Cap del Creus National Park via Cadaqués, which is the most easterly point in Spain. On their route back from here to Girona, they'll tackle one last significant climb, Els Àngels, before descending down into Girona and getting their brevet card stamped one last time at the finish line at Eat Sleep Cycle.
TPR shares its rules with Losdot's other races. They are its foundations from which our riders can then build their own stories of courage and camaraderie, of persistence and fair play.
All Losdot races have 10 simple rules that guide them. So these have been in place for a long time now. And the idea is that by having these rules, we can promote safety on the race. We can promote self-reliance and equality, and also make it as level playing field as possible for all the riders who are taking part. And really that starts to speak to the 10th rule, which is to ride in the spirit of self-reliance and equal opportunity. And what we mean by this is making sure that you think about the relationship between yourself and the other riders. So are you doing anything which gives you an unfair advantage over the people that you're competing against? The example that we ordinarily give for this is thinking about a red light. So you could stop at a traffic light in the middle of nowhere. No one's around. They're not going to see that you're stopped at a red light. There's no one to kind of get evidence if you decide to roll through that, but what you do is you decide to wait until that light goes green, because ultimately that's what you would expect of the people in front of and behind you. And by doing this, you're making sure that you're sticking to the rules of the road, but also making sure that it's as fair as possible for everyone taking part. If our riders meet the 10 rules that we have, they will be awarded a completion and a finishing time for the race, and a general classification finish as well. So general classification is a category finish, as we call it. So essentially the idea behind that is to be able to distinguish between people who are riding a true solo or pairs effort versus those who are completing the race, but perhaps outside of the time limits or perhaps by accessing some support along the way. So if all of those 10 rules are followed, the riders get their time listed, so like kind of the days, hours and minutes, and an official position in the race finish overall as well.
In a strong all-round field, there are a number of brilliant women taking on the challenge of TPR number 4, and that includes Fiona Kolbinger, who, like Robin, arrives at the start line as a previous winner of the Transcontinental Race, taking the crown in 2019 at TCR number 7.
Quite excited. I'm really busy at the moment. I started planning my route probably right when I signed up. And I've been changing bits here and there over time. But I'm getting really excited right now, and I've compiled all my gear. One part I had to send to Spain to the hotel, but things seem to be almost complete. I haven't been riding outside too much. I have done a lot of indoor training over the summer and a bit of running and so on, just because the place where I currently live is not the best for cycling. But quite excited, and it's a big experiment for me, because I haven't ever been this oddly prepared or weirdly prepared for such a demanding race, honestly. Mm-hmm.
Do you have a kind of any sort of goal? Is it you're just going to take it as it comes, or how are you approaching it?
Yeah, I mean, I do these races because I like the competitive spirit, right? I could also just go bikepacking without a time limit, or without competitors, or without needing to sleep outside or something like that, book hotels and enjoy the luxury a bit. But what I really enjoy about these races is that they take you out of your comfort zone to some extent, and they make you see more than you would probably see if you were just out on a bikepacking trip. It's a very different way of traveling and a different way of riding your bike, in my opinion. Mm-hmm. But all very exciting, and that's what I'm looking forward to. That being said, I don't have any clear ambitions, and I've never had for any race that I did. And I don't think it's wise to set ambitions very high or to set ambitions to win or to come in a specific position. But that being said, on almost all of my races that I've done, or actually all of the races that I've done so far, I came in the top 10 overall. And that is something that I would be happy about. But I'm also not having a bad time if I just end up finishing and having a good time, right? Like, this is still my free time. And and I'm looking forward to spending more time on my bike, spending a lot of time in a beautiful place. The climbing, I really missed that. So
Fiona is taking on the Trans-Pyrénées race for the first time. But for Caroline Buckland, this will be a second attempt after a bout of Schirmer's neck forced her to scratch, to stop riding at last year's edition.
What is it about the race that appeals to you?
I suppose it's twofold. One was I didn't finish it last year, so I've got unfinished business, which I would like to come back. I was a bit frustrated with myself on the reason why I got Schirmer's neck, and I think it was something that I could probably have steered away from, just being a bit smarter. I wasn't overly smart in the event. My sleep was pretty sporadic. I either slept too much or slept too little. I had too much weight in my rucksack. It was mainly meant to be just for my water, and I'd end up putting more in out of probably laziness. And then my handlebars, thinking about it, my handlebars were a little bit low, so I pulled them up this year. So I think it probably could have been something that I didn't have to deal with.
Mm-hmm. What is it about the race that appeals to you?
I'd probably say there's two, three things. One is the scenery, and just it's like nothing else. And really the challenge of it is part of the joy, the climbing and the steepness that you get in the climb. You don't really find anywhere else, particularly for the length of the climb as well. So it actually kind of put me in my place a little bit. I think I got a little bit almost like, oh, I can do this. This isn't going to be too challenging. And it hit me like a ton of bricks on day one. And I think I needed that. And I kind of got into my stride within a few days. And I found the climbing easier and I found my climbing legs. But it did hit me like a ton of bricks on day one. But I think that was part of the joy about it was, finding the reason that you wanted to do it, and the challenge is what makes something so enjoyable in the first place. Mm-hmm. Is coming out of it and going, that was the hardest thing I've done, but I've done it, and I really enjoyed it, and I'm really happy with myself. So sticking with it.
TPR is only possible with the support of its volunteers, a network of people who help make sure the race runs safely and smoothly.
We literally couldn't run the race in the way that we do without the help of volunteers. So each year we recruit a range of people to help us both from home, but also out at the different control points along the race as well. So the motivations for people to come and volunteer with the race are always like different and quite personal. So some of them are riders who've ridden before and they want to give back. Others are people who have an interest in racing in the future and they want to get a little bit closer to the action so they can sort of see the dynamics of the race and understand it in greater detail. And then for other people, it's just that they're really passionate about supporting people to have these amazing adventures. We're lucky enough to have that kind of mixture of people who are coming for the first time, people who are coming back for maybe the second or the third time. And again, we've already spoken a little bit about the enduring appeal of the Trans-Pyrénées race. We have a couple of people who raced last year who are actually going to come and be at the control points along the way, so they know exactly what those riders are going through, the emotional highs and lows. And I think that that's a really important part of making sure that that whole kind of overarching race experience is one that is like really sympathetic to their needs as well. And it's kind of like a warm environment for them to arrive into. And that's a really nice thing.
TPR4 will be Jamie Oliver's third time volunteering at the Trans-Pyrénées race. Stuart spoke to him about how and why he got started as a volunteer.
I wanted to get a better sense of actually how the race is conducted, how people race it, what is their strategy, what causes people to succeed, what causes people to scratch. And you can understand that on a whole different level if you're part of the game, seeing the racers every single day execute their strategy and see it play out for the better or for the worse. So at the time, that was, I think, TPR number 2 that I first was getting involved in for some dot watching. And I could see that for myself, how that all played out. So it was a great intro to kind of see how things are done, which then allowed me to go on and design my route in a way that would be successful and make sure I wasn't breaking any rules inadvertently. But it was just a learning journey for me to learn how the mechanics of the race really work. Mm-hmm. So that was like phase one. And then after I had raced TCR, I took a bit of time off from the dot watching. I was actually on a sabbatical doing a kind of around the world cycling trip. So following that, though, coming back, I continued to volunteer. Now it was no longer trying to prep myself for a race, but it was to give back in a way where I could, you know, live the magic every year and reconnect with the race every year. And even though you're not the one out there suffering through climbs and heat waves and lack of food and lack of sleep, you can live vicariously through the riders, and there's excitement there. There's things happening every day. And just to be able to follow it, to watch the, you know, the coverage, to read the blogs, to look at the photos coming in, and then to also be part of that race execution as, you know, a leading role, being able to help out, is fantastic. So it's really giving back. You get out of it more than what you give in. It's really like a two-way thing. It's just really great to continue being part of the community. So yeah, very happy to stick around and lend my expertise.
Over the last couple of years, Lost Dot has put initiatives in place that acknowledge and improve the sustainability of its races. It's become an important part of our philosophy, and we want to encourage more and more people to make sustainable choices where possible.
Sustainability is really important to us at Lost Dot. Cycling in its purest form can be such an environmentally friendly form of transport, but often we ignore the environmental impact of travel to and from the places that we choose to ride our bikes. It's no secret that flying is a huge carbon emitter, and it forms the biggest portion of the carbon footprint of our races. We want to encourage our riders to opt for low carbon alternatives, like taking trains and buses and public transport. And we also practice what we preach by ensuring that all of our staff and sponsors also travel to our races flight free. Overland travel does often come with an additional financial cost, though. And so last year, we started offering grants via the Low Carbon Travel Fund, giving £250 each to a selection of riders who wanted to travel overland, but who might otherwise have been unable to afford or justify the cost of traveling overland versus flying. And we've continued to provide those grants this year for the race. We also celebrate all of the riders taking sustainable travel with the Green Leaderboard, a race classification dedicated solely to those traveling overland to and from the race. At present, around half of our riders have signed up for this, and we expect that this number might increase tomorrow on registration day. You'll be able to follow these riders' race progress via the Green Leaderboard classification, which will have its own separate tab on the race tracking on our website.
At Lost Dot, we also want to make our races as accessible and open to as many people as possible, and we're delighted to welcome bursary riders to the start line at TPR for the first time.
The Mike Hall Bursary was first introduced for TCR number 8 back in 2022 and has run for the past three editions of that race. And this year we are bringing it to the Trans-Pyrenees race as well. The bursary is designed to make sure that the only thing that stops people from getting to the start line is their desire to be there and their aptitude on a bike. So it is specifically targeted at riders on a low income. We have two riders taking part in the bursary this year. So we have Judit from Hungary and Maxim from Ukraine. So also kind of continuing the trend that we had from TCR this year, where on top of the income threshold for the bursary, we're also focusing on widening participation in the race for people from different countries, perhaps which have fewer options for cycling as well, so that we can make the race as diverse and as inclusive as possible. The riders each receive a grant. So this is broken down into payments which they receive over the course of the race. So that helps to offset the cost of the participation. And they also receive their place on the race for free, so they don't have to pay that registration fee. And then they also receive support from our race partners to make sure that they have the best possible kit available to them for taking part. Which can otherwise be a prohibitive barrier for people participating in races like this.
There are many great reasons to take part in ultra-distance races like TPR. The challenge, of course, and the chance to ride your bike through jaw-dropping landscapes. But perhaps the thing that keeps people coming back for more is the community. That sense of shared experience, of writing your own story in a collection of other similar stories. Similar, but still entirely unique.
And this isn't just for this race specifically, but across ultra racing, I just love the community you get. And one of the reasons that I moved over was because I was bikepacking and I was missing the sense of the community and people. And what I loved is I came along to this race and others, and there were suddenly loads of people around you. And as long as you're not the top five, there are always going to be people around you. So I would pass the same four or five guys every day. You'd have a natter. You'd make a joke, but it was really nice knowing that other people were suffering with you. And I think with the Pyrenees in particular, I made some really great friendships along the way. And you check in with each other. And one of the other women, she had to drop out. And she just ended up messaging me on Instagram being like, I'm following you. You're doing fantastic. Keep going. And I just thought that was really lovely.
Join us in our next episode to hear more from our riders at Registration Day in Girona, where months of scheming and dreaming will suddenly feel extremely real. They'll be there to pick up their race caps, get their bike checked, and attend the final rider briefing. And we'll be on hand to find out how they're feeling with the peaks of the Pyrenees before them and the start line fewer than 24 hours away. You can read Stuart's daily race reports on the Lost Dog website and get regular updates across all our social media channels. Thanks to our race partners, Pedaled, Tailfin, Komoot, and Peak Design.